Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Friday, and I'm in love, April 5th, 2024. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, and plenty of guests, Stan Weber, Mike McFarlane, Greg Gurley, Tim Grenhard, and Mike DeCourcy at 9:30. A little bit of a switcheroo. We have to manage schedules of guests, and so Mike McFarlane a little bit earlier than normal at 8. Greg Gurley, 8:30, that's normal. Grenhard at 9, but then Mike DeCourcy at 9:30.
Mike's out west.
Nice job booking the show till 10 o'clock because, you know, sometimes people forget the show lasts until 10 around here.
Mufasa, you know we finally here, right?
Well,
it's Friday then, it's Saturday, Sunday.
My compliments to the chef.
Gourmet.
Gourmet.
Gourmet coffee.
Gourmet coffee.
I was afraid maybe you're just going to turn your back on me and walk out at 9:30 today.
No, that's me.
You know, oh.
No time.
Hello.
Where are you going?
Nash, Vegas.
There's only one flight to Nashville this weekend.
Is that right?
That's not true.
You need to put that in your little book of notes there. The show lasts until 10.
Dude,
remind yourself.
Show.
So you can reference that from time to time.
Every day?
Yeah. You like to pull this, don't you?
Oh, I think
oh,
this
Friday
is,
you like to mail it in, don't you?
This is rare. This has only happened once or twice.
No, it's at least the second time.
I mean, you've got to make sure you put it in the portal, right? You put that 30 minutes off on
right.
Vacation time.
Yeah.
Well, you better.
Put it in the portal. You still do that thing around here?
Lebo tries to get me to do it, but I'll do it. If that's what he wants.
I'll be off next Friday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I haven't seen any documentation.
The people who I need to know know.
Think maybe I need to know or not?
I told you guys.
I can be on that list. There you go. Thanks.
If you don't know, now you know.
I emailed you guys.
Let's see. What's going on Monday?
National championship?
Maybe I'll just stay home on Monday. I could.
Sure.
I've got business to conduct on Tuesday and Thursday.
I have a dog having surgery next week, so.
What's the surgery?
They're removing a tumor.
Wow.
Serious business.
Yeah. So.
I'm sure that's pretty cheap. They're really reasonable.
I got milk aplenty.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That raw milk aplenty.
Hopefully the dog is okay.
Yes.
You have pet insurance?
No. No, I don't have human insurance, Nate. Why would I have pet insurance?
Well, fair question.
Right. You really don't have human insurance?
No.
Oh, boy.
No.
I got a lot of questions about that, but we can just move on. Trust me, I went through this long ordeal with Richie. You know, that's why he had to leave School of Rock, because they would not make him full-time. Well, he was working full-time hours, but they wouldn't make him full-time, so he wasn't getting benefits. And you don't care about that, you know, when you're 21, 22, 23, still...
44.
Still,
44.
Yeah, still...
Depending on the circumstances.
Still nourishing... from the teat of your parents. Because I keep the kids on my insurance as long as I can, as long
yeah,
as possible.
Makes sense.
Then you got to that point, you know. And
what's that age cutoff?
Is it 25 or 26?
Oh, so I'm past yours. I can't.
Yeah. But it got to that point, and, you know, you don't ever have that discussion. If you're, you know, you don't care until you care, right? Then you might need to go to the dentist, or you might need to, well, anything could happen. Hell, I mean, you could go twist an ankle You have to go to urgent care and check out that bill if you don't have insurance. I'm not telling people something they don't already know. But he went out and got a good job with full benefits. And I used to always, like, whenever I was taking my journey through life as a young man and going from job to job to job to job to job to job to job, my job search would always entail my mother filling my ears with everything that she thought she needed to tell me. And whenever I'd go for a job interview or I was on a job search, she'd always tell me, "The most important thing, benefits. Make sure they have 401k." And I'm like, you know, 20, like, I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
"Make sure they have good dental." And I'm just like, how much is it an hour?
Mm-hmm.
How much money will you give me to do this thing that I don't want to do for you? Which is a question I've asked many times in my life. But then you get to a certain point, I don't know what age was for me, like, then you realize, oh, the benefits package really is the most important thing here, isn't it? It is, you know, and for him. And so maybe I could have that pep talk with you. We can get you some insurance, you know? I don't want you to fall down the stairs one day or something like that. I know you take pride in your health, but sometimes things happen that are beyond your control.
That's what credit cards are for.
You know? Well, we can talk about that also. I can show you some things. I can show you some wrong roads I've gone down.
Yeah.
All right, then. There's life with the Border Patrol. Thank you. So we've got a full show. Nate won't be a part of the entire show. He's leaving early. 9:30.
Pay will be docked.
8:30.
Well,
what time? I don't know.
Yeah, 9:30. So basically, you get to talk to DeCourcy. DeCourcy gets off. He doesn't have to talk to me.
Well, there's plenty of basketball to talk to about Mike DeCourcy. I watched a good portion of the NIT championship game last night, which is, I can't remember the last time I've been able to say that sentence. That was a very, very exciting basketball game. That was as exciting as many of the NCAA tournament games that I've watched, because, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, you know, what does the NIT mean to a school? Some schools don't care at all, to the point where they decline an invitation. Other schools, it's a gigantic achievement to get there. Like, say, for instance, one of the teams that played last night, in the NIT, Indiana State, they deserved to be, both of those teams last night, Seton Hall and Indiana State, deserved to be in the NCAA tournament based on their resumes, I believe. Apparently I was wrong, because the tournament committee did not think so and put teams like Virginia in instead. And I would challenge anyone to watch that brand of basketball that was on display last night and then tell me that those two teams couldn't have added something to the NCAA tournament. Indiana State's a joy to watch. Indiana State will fire up threes even when they shouldn't, and it costs them the basketball game. Because we had talked about, what was the line?
Three
yesterday,
and a half.
I was mad.
Indiana State.
There's the life of, you know, working in Kansas and living in Missouri. I could throw down some bets on DraftKings Sportsbook if I want to. While I'm here at work, then I go home. If I forget here and there was a game I wanted to bet on or whatever, then can't do nothing at home.
You just text me next
time,
buddy.
Right. Well, just, you know. But I guess it protects.
I'll leave the juice running.
Thank you. It protects me from the impulse bet, whatever.
Yeah.
But then the game was getting ready to start. So, I forgot I wanted to put some money on Indiana State. Damn it. Tie game, 39 at halftime. And then, I mean, and it was a good game. Back and forth, and the other thing that makes it good is the crowd, right? And that game was Indiana, and then look, Seton Hall had a pretty good crowd there as well, but I mean, just loaded with Indiana State fans. It didn't look like there was an empty seat in the house, and the crowd was going crazy. I didn't watch enough NIT when it was still at Madison Square Garden, if they got good turnouts or if it was a good atmosphere. That was a great atmosphere last night. That was awesome. And so, of course, that added to it, right? And so then, towards the end of the game, Indiana State hits a couple of threes, hit one crazy three, and they extended their lead late to 7 points. And I was so I was glad because Indiana State, I wanted them to win, but I was so pissed off. Of course, now they're going to win, and they're going to cover, and I'm sitting here, and I'm going to be angry about it. And the crowd was going crazy. They were celebrating. Seton Hall called a timeout. Honestly, I thought the game was over. It was 77-70 after Isaiah Swope made a long three with 3:05 left. And then Seton Hall called a timeout, 2:54 left. All the momentum was with Indiana State. 77-70, right? They had just hit three baskets in a row. They had just gone on an 8-0 run because they're down one, including back-to-back threes. After that timeout with 2:54 left, they never scored again. And Seton Hall finished the game on a 9-0 run. And part of it was a couple of times Indiana State just came down and just didn't even work the clock, didn't even really do it, just fired up a quick three. There was one especially, our big boy, and I felt bad for him. They kept showing his parents. And our big boy, Ravi Avila, he missed at least two, but he missed a couple of wide open threes that would have made a huge difference, obviously. I mean, any basket from anyone. Like, yeah, right after Seton Hall hit a layup after the timeout, Indiana State comes down, Avila missed a three. And then they missed another shot. And then there was like probably 1:20 left. Yeah, here we go. Seton Hall made a couple of free throws, made it a three-point game. Indiana State comes back. And like 5 seconds into the shot clock, Avila just fired up a three. Didn't make it, and is Seton Hall won. Seton Hall, it was a great, great shot to take the lead. And then Indiana State did have the ball with 8 seconds left, called a timeout, attempted a three, lost control of the ball, grabbed it back, put it up again, got it blocked. But then Skid Conwell had a decent look, but as soon as it left his hands, and it was guarded, and it was right in front of the Indiana State bench, I thought it was in. Even the announce crew thought it was in. But it was short, and that was the game. And the Indiana State kids collapsed in tears. And because it was, you know, what was it, Hinkle Fieldhouse in Indiana with all their people there. But it was, and when's the last time like you were emotionally invested in an IT game where like you were watching this, like, oh, this is awesome, this is great. And it was terrific. And so, and maybe for Indiana State, this run, if they would have won the NIT, sure, that would have been better, maybe, you could argue, than going to the NCAA tournament and being a one and done, or I don't know. I mean, I think you'd have to win it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you could call that, you know, remember, you know, we won 33 games and won the NIT in our home state, but then they lost. But it was just another reminder, like, those two teams should have been in the NCAA tournament. And it was a hell of a basketball game. And so I found myself watching and caring about the NIT championship. And it was really, really good.
Yeah, we watched it too. I was explaining it because my wife and I were having dinner and all the other kids were out doing stuff. And so it was just the two of us.
So do you watch the end?
Yeah.
When they just...
Yeah.
I was, because that's part of the joy. Like, they're this kind of, you know, wide open offensive basketball team, but like,
yeah,
we taking that 3-4.
And there's just something about Robbie,
yeah,
Avila, that gets, because I was telling my wife about him. I said, you know, this is a guy that everybody was disappointed that team didn't make the tournament because he just seems like a character and everybody wants to root for him. And, you know, as soon as she saw him, she's like, oh, yeah, I love this guy, you know, and So she was rooting for Indiana State. You know, she got into it.
But you know, we're good at Seton Hall. You're down seven with 3 minutes left,
game.
Right,
yeah.
In a hostile environment. And then you finish the game on a 9-0 run. So
yeah. Hey. I was with you. I didn't understand why Indiana State was taking shots so quickly.
I didn't know what was going on.
Like, you shortened the game up. But maybe they
felt
like
they weren't even good looks, really.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's no reason to. If you're wide open, but
right, like they were taking shots as if they were down.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe you don't want to lose your aggressiveness. I don't know, but to me, shorten the game. You shouldn't be taking shots unless there's less than 10 seconds on the shot clock, or unless it's just a layup.
You know, in moving forward, keep your eye on Seton Hall. Because they have one of the most impressive young coaches in the game, Shaheen Holloway. And you remember his profile really blew up in the NCAA tournament because he was the head coach at St. Peter's when they had the upset over Kentucky.
Would you guys like to hear the last two plays?
Sure.
Haas in their effort to just take some time here for the moment. Dawes to Davis. Into the hands of Richmond. He's been phenomenal. Six to shoot. Davis spinning, shooting, scoring. Seton Hall's got the lead. Here comes Larry with 14 seconds to go. Julian Larry.
Here comes Swope.
He's got it. Tries to launch at the three. There's no call. He gets his block by Bediako. It's tapped around. There's still 2 seconds to go. It's Caldwell for the win. No! And Seton Hall wins the 2024 NIT Championship.
And I know Mike was tweeting about that, so we'll talk to Mike DeCourcy about that. But then also, tonight, it's the women's Final Four. And, I mean, you talk about excitement. You talk about the excitement of my daughter, Selena, and how bad she wants to watch this game. And honestly, how bad I want to watch this game. This is just going to be... It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait. And I mean, hey, it's one of those players that, I mean, you'll remember for a long time watching her and where you were when you watched her and the 41-point performance she put up in the Elite Eight against LSU. And the story continues tonight as UConn takes on Iowa and the showdown, the battle between Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers. And you know, Kim Mulkey being criticized for her lack of game plan against Caitlin Clark and Iowa this time around. But now you've got the GOAT, Gino Auriemma, to see what he's going to have in his bag. And again, Paige Beckers, she's one of the best players in the nation as well. And that's the second game. The first game will be North Carolina State and South Carolina. And South Carolina, again, no one really talking about South Carolina. They're 36-0. And so that's at 6 o'clock, the first game, NC State, South Carolina. And then the second game after 8 o'clock, UConn and Iowa. And it's in Cleveland, Ohio, at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. And so I'm super excited about this. South Carolina is favored by 11.5. Iowa favored by 2.5 over UConn. Remind me before I leave, please. I don't want to go through that again. Although I was saved last night because Indiana State didn't come through. And maybe, you know what, maybe I shouldn't ruin this. Maybe I should just keep this pure and watch this and enjoy the game so I'm not rooting for my bet.
I think that's the taking on this one.
Nah.
Enjoy this as a neutral.
Nah.
Just sit back and enjoy the
game. I do want Iowa to win. I was questioning Selena, like, who do you want to win? I just want to watch the game. Why do I have to tell? Why does it always have to be? I'm asking you. I want to know.
Yeah. Get your take.
I want Iowa to win too.
Paige Beckers is awesome, though, man.
Yep.
I think South Carolina's going to win it all, though.
Iowa versus South Carolina is
super hot take. Jake thinks the undefeated number one team might win it all.
But nobody seems to be talking about them all that.
They probably enjoy that.
Well,
or at least for now.
Yeah, puts a nice chip on their shoulder. I mean,
right.
They've been as dominant as UConn has been on the men's side. I mean, they're a double-digit favorite.
Well, they haven't lost this year.
And what, Iowa beat them in the Elite Eight last year?
Yes.
So that would be a hell of a rematch.
It's a Final Four.
Final Four.
Yeah.
Final Four.
Final Four.
77-73. Caitlin Clark went for 41 in that one. We want to see that again, right?
That was a great game to watch.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's and then into tomorrow, the men's Final Four.
The inevitable. Death march for the other three teams.
We'll see. UConn, Alabama, and Purdue in North Carolina State. I still do think that Purdue might be able to give them a game.
Yeah, they might keep it in the single
on Monday if it turns out that way. But I just like I don't know. Like it's silly to predict anything else because UConn just keeps steamrolling everyone. So. And that's probably, at least for me, taking away a little bit, taking a little excitement or anticipation away, because it just doesn't seem like there's. It's right. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. Inevitability. Right.
Yeah.
Of UConn winning this championship, but look, crazier things have happened, and I do think if there's any team equipped to give them some problems, it could be Purdue, but they got to get there first. So, a lot of basketball. We'll talk all about that with Mike DeCourcy. The Chiefs' new backup quarterback was introduced yesterday in Carson Wentz. We'll hear some comments from him. The Royals put it on the White Sox.
Yeah.
Another good starting pitching performance. Another good offensive performance. So, we got a lot of good stuff. Basketball is the headliner, but, man, a lot of good stuff to talk about. Stan Weber will be with us after this. And then Mike McFarland, Greg Gurley, Tim Grenhardt, Mike DeCourcy, and you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yes!
Jake, one thing I did do, because it's legal in Missouri, is I played underdog fantasy last night. And a round of applause for me and the Kansas City Royals, because in the champions pick'em, I had White Sox pitcher Michael Soroka higher than 5.5 hits allowed, Michael Garcia higher than .5 runs scored, and Bobby Witt Jr. higher than 1.5 total bases. Let's call the winner. Thank you, Nate. You know, think I'm playing? I ain't playing. That's a
Look
winner,
at you.
Buddy. Yeah. Look at the Royals.
Winning.
They're fattening up on those White Sox.
Good. The Royals win 10-1. Another excellent pitching performance from Seth Lugo, one of the free agents added in the offseason. He goes 6 2/3, 8 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Zerpa, Sauer, and Lyles get the job done. Boy, the bullpen would have blown that one, then I may not have been here today. Michael Garcia drove in another run. Bobby Witt Jr. was 2 for 3. MJ Melendez was 2 for 4. Nelson Velasquez, stud, 2 for 3 with a walk. Kyle Isbell had a couple of ribbies. Melendez and Velasquez both hit home runs. Good night at the ballpark for the Royals.
How about those Royals?
And the White Sox. Stan Weber joins us. Stan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
The Royals are exciting to watch right now. Even though they're 3-4, they could be 4-3 or 5-2. Great starting pitching so far. Exciting young players. What the hell is going on at the ballpark? That's, you know, what people have been mad about the stadium vote. And then just very quietly, a pretty good baseball team has emerged. So I'll take that. Let's go.
All my buddies, my family, everyone's excited about the Royals. And unfortunately, what you said is true, that they are exciting to watch all the way to the end, because it looks like with a 3-0 lead late in the game, this one's over. In most baseball games, you can say Royals are going to win. And then we know that has not been the case. Bullpen runs given up in the last, 14 runs in the last two innings by the Royals so far this year. After a starting staff that is going deeper into games than most teams ever allow them at the end of the year, and it's the beginning of the year when they're protecting them, And their ERA is what, 1.5? Or
we haven't seen a bad start yet.
It's just that the starting pitching is awesome.
McElwain, sorry.
The offense is exciting. A lot of things good, but then how do they have a losing record? So it's early in the year. Definitely thumbs up, exciting times. So this should be a very fun season for the Royals. You just hope it doesn't come down to two games or something at the end, and then you remember these games that they never should have lost at the end. Two in Baltimore, right?
Right.
Should have swept that series.
Bobby Witt Jr. looks like he could be an MVP candidate. It's early, says Nate. MJ Melendez is hitting very well. Nelson Velasquez is hitting the cover off the ball. Mikel Garcia looks like the breakout player that I predicted he would be this year. And what one good thing is, it's not good, but Vinny Pasquantino has not started to hit at all. And so, and he's too good. And look, he's coming back from the shoulder surgery and everything else. He's too good not to hit. And when he does start hitting, then all of a sudden, then your number three guy gets hot because maybe some of the other guys will come back to earth. So that's exciting. It's not. You know,
don't forget my guy Salvador.
That's
Perez.
Right. That's Salvi.
But he's the man.
You believe in Salvi. Absolutely. He's the glue that keeps it all together.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see the Royals go at it early this year. And all my buddies, I can't believe how excited they are and how mad they
are
because they lost a couple of games. Because it seems like with COVID, they always have to say, that period of time just leveled off the enthusiasm level in certain areas. And that included baseball. And it didn't seem to really come back where they were into every game and mad that they lost in the ninth inning, and how is this reliever possibly in that position? And it's been fun to see all that emotion come out. It's like the old days.
Okay, Stan, we've got to get to at least I had probably three or four people via email or tweeting at me wanted me to ask you about Jerome Tang. And so I'll ask you about Jerome Tang and just get your thoughts on this. For people that have not been following the situation, Eric Musselman, Muss, who likes to take his shirt off after wins and taunt people, he's leaving Arkansas to go to USC. He's a California guy who grew up and went to school in San Diego, and a lot of people said he wanted to get back out west, and so he leaves Arkansas, and now he's going to be the head coach at USC. And so Arkansas... Hey, it's an attractive job. You know, they got a lot of money. They got a lot of resources. But it's been fun there's all these arguments. Like, how good of a job is Arkansas? And all these SEC people fighting with each other. It's great. You know, I love it. I just like to watch.
They're your rival at Mizzou, aren't they?
Yeah, sure, why not? The battle line. And so Jeff Borzello from ESPN.com, College Basketball Insider. He wrote about how good is the Arkansas Razorbacks job? And so that they got a lot of response. But then he mentions the names that are being tossed around. Number one is a guy we're familiar with that has kind of been off the radar, Chris Beard, who's been one year at Ole Miss. And he's ready to say goodbye, Ole Miss, perhaps, and say hello to Arkansas. And then the second coach that Borzello mentions and some other college basketball people have mentioned that Arkansas would be interested in, Jerome Tang. Now, look, if you have a good basketball coach, that's going to happen. Other teams are going to want your coach. And so that's the price of doing business. So when you hear that, what's your reaction?
Well, first of all, you always got to be conservative about things. When you're rooting for your school, your team, you want the musical chairs to stop and you settle in and hear where everyone's coaching for next season. That always is the final conclusion where you go, okay, let's go. So this surprise that USC's coach went to SMU and then Arkansas's coach goes to USC, musical chairs have not stopped yet. So obviously, you want to respect the fact that Jerome Tang is a well-established head coach in college basketball. And then, like you said, when you got a good coach, you're going to be attracted by others to say they want to see if you are interested. Who knows if Arkansas is really interested, but at least for the media to start with names, why wouldn't you throw those guys' names out like Chris Beard and Jerome Tang? Now, before this all started, my approach and attitude about this is no different than it is right now, where we're toward the end of things finally being settled around the country. And that is, I've always felt like Jerome Tang and Kansas State are a great fit together. And I think he is such a smart guy that he appreciates what is going on at K-State and how well it fits with the way he likes to do things. There is passion about basketball. When he says the fans ought to show up when you're, what, 80, 90% full, and he's saying, why aren't we 100% full? K-Staters don't really blink an eye that much because they fill up Bramlage. They care about basketball, even though football is a big deal at K-State. Basketball is as well. The fans, the students especially, are really into what Jerome Tang is wanting to sell, how he's delivering his message. They're taking it. Give me more. Give me more. His two children are at K-State right now, students. His parents have moved to Manhattan. He's got a great house, and they're fixing it up and getting things done the way they want, and that takes a while. Oh, by the way, he's been there a year and a half probably, and that hasn't been true the whole time. It takes a while for them to settle in and get what they want. So I just believe on a behind-the-scenes life, a chance to win, the passion of the fans, the connectivity. He's a Big 12 guy. You might say, well, he's a Texas guy. Yes, but he had 19 years in the Big 12 at Baylor. In his big-time coaching entry, he was with Scott Drew at Baylor, right? And then to K-State for 2 years. So when he says the Big 12 is the best conference, I don't think that's just every coach saying it, because Stephen, if you were the new head coach at a Big 12 school, you'd say the Big 12 is the best basketball conference.
That's,
I mean,
right.
Everyone's going to say it. But I think Jerome Tang actually believes it, and it's part of his being. A big-time college basketball to him has been the Big 12. So I have never worried very much, other than I started with, right, the comment that you always respect that something can happen. You never know till it all settles down till the next year. And you know how long you think your coach is going to be there after that? 1 year till it starts all over again, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. There are opportunities out there. There's money. There's life situations. But I have always felt comfortable that Jerome Tang would be back coaching the Wildcats next year. And he just signed Doug McDaniel, you know, in a transfer portal, a guy who started for Michigan, a point guard that really was productive there. He is signed to come to K-State. It just shows you the connectivity of his work right now. And so, yeah, I'll respect always. Until all the jobs are settled, let's just wait and see. But generally my attitude's been for the last 2 months, when there's been any discussions about this, that I think Jerome Tang will stay at K-State because it is a great match. K-State is giving him a lot. He's not the only one giving to K-State. K-State's not only giving him a lot of money, they're giving him a lot of other things that are really special and different than a lot of other universities.
So the other guy that they're mentioning, which I think this makes sense, Will Wade. And he writes, it's only a matter of time before a big program takes another chance on Wade. The further removed he gets from his NCAA punishment, he orchestrated one of the biggest turnarounds in the NCAA this season, taking McNeese from 11-23 to 30-4 in his first year in the program. And, of course, he was at LSU in the SEC. And if you were at all, is Arkansas going to do that? Arkansas brought back Bobby Petrino, and so they don't care. They'll be more than happy
to
bring in Will Wade.
Chris Beard, and then Wade should go to Mississippi, and they'll cleanse another coach.
There it is. Yeah, so the potential candidates.
No, seriously, Beard is, I mean, these coaches, these humans,
right,
do a lot of things, right? I mean, Chris Beard's a big-time coach.
What did we think of Chris Beard? You know, he was in the national championship game with Texas Tech.
Yes.
And remember when he went to Texas, like, oh, boy, now, here we go. Here's the team that's going to challenge Bill Self in Kansas now, Chris Beard in Texas. And then, to your point, look what happened.
Well, I think getting a coach who's gone through some hard times and giving them a second chance has worked out as a very smart strategy. Think about Sutton at Oklahoma State. That's a little bit in the past rearview mirror. If you're a modern fan, you don't know about it. But he went through Kentucky, had some problems there. They ran him out. He's down on his luck. He made mistakes. They didn't like him. Oklahoma State said, well, why don't you come back here? And look what he did. He settled in, and he went strong. Chris Beard could be that guy for someone like Arkansas and say, you know, I don't want to make those mistakes anymore. And he got a great coach. And then Mississippi can move on and say, hey, we just need someone to win. How about that guy who's down the street at LSU? That'll really piss them off. They're a rival. Let's bring him in.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jerome Tang can stay at K-State, and it all works out well.
Buzz Williams, A&M. He likes to jump jobs. There's another name. Bucky McMillan from Samford. And then that's it. You got anything to say about this? Is coaching carousel, Nate Buchanan?
I was just thinking about the concept of the Arkansas job versus the K-State job. And, you know, people like to have these debates on what's the better job. And I always find it interesting. It seems like Arkansas fan base believes their job is one of the top jobs in the country. And, you know, we'll just go pluck this guy from here or there. And so I was looking at it, you know, when you look from a historical standpoint, they got the one national championship that was in 1994. K-State's got a runner-up finish in 1951. They made it to six Final Fours. K-State's made it to four. But when you look at, like, the recent history, K-State's won major conference titles much more recently than Arkansas has. The last time Arkansas won the SEC was 1994. They haven't won a conference title in basketball in a conference that's not, you know, the. I mean, there's great teams in the SEC.
In the last 4 years, though, I think he's had him, was it?
Elite Eight twice
in the Sweet 16, so you have to mention that.
Yeah, that's true. But K-State's been to the Elite Eight a couple times in the not-too-distant history as well. So I'm not saying.
Arkansas does pay their coach about $1.2 million more a year.
So that's what I was going to wonder right there.
So Musselman made $4.2 million last year. Jerome Tang's salary is $3 million.
Now, Jerome Tang's, this is his first year as a head coach, and he's, you know, so it doesn't mean that K-State wouldn't be willing to pay that necessarily if they thought it was, you know, if he keeps doing well and all that stuff. I'm not really taking a side on it. I'm just saying, like, I feel like a lot of Arkansas fans would say, well, our job's clearly the better job. And I think if you look at it, you can make an argument that it's very similar. I don't know. I don't know that you have a better chance to win at Arkansas than you do at Kansas State.
Except if you think the Big 12 is harder to win.
I guess that you can look at it either way. Is it better to be in the better conference? Supposedly, when it comes to football, everybody should want to be in the SEC, right? Because it's the best conference. So if you want to be in the best conference, you want to be in the Big 12. I don't know. What are you looking at?
It's interesting because competition matters.
Yeah.
But eight of the 14 teams in the Big 12 made the NCAA tournament, and two of them were Oklahoma was the last team out.
Yeah.
That would have been 9 out of 14 this year. And Jerome Tang thought his team deserved the opportunity right there. So you're looking at 9 or 10 of 14.
And it's going to get tougher. Also,
in basketball, you get rewarded.
SEC has the Final Four team right now, too, though.
But you get rewarded in the Big 12 in basketball.
Right.
For playing hard teams. In football, if you lose, everyone forgets who you lose to.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose to Murderers Row, they're like, well, but you lost three times, so you're done.
Yeah.
But in basketball, the math is such that you play hard opponents and you get value. So I don't think you should be scared of that. The thing the SEC has, generally, not just to Arkansas, is that the future of the money flow is going to be extremely different in the SEC and the Big Ten than the other conferences. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You talk about paying your head coach $1 million extra. That should be something the SEC schools are going to be able to do time after time after time, because there's never been this type of differential in the amount of income that's going to flow in.
Yeah.
Where's that money going to go? That's the question. Just because Texas has a budget that is way bigger than Missouri's and K-State's and KU and athletics, does that mean that they're going to dominate them on the football field or the men's basketball court?
It hasn't.
Not necessarily, right? So it just depends on what you're talking about. The SEC and the Big 10 are going to have, I'm just going to throw out a number there, gosh, it might be $40 million more a year flowing in from television, the real source of income. They may have $40 million more, where they were getting about $15 million more for a while. So if you want your own paycheck to be in good shape or better shape, or your assistant coaches, I get it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're going to spend the money the right way. And even if they give you $5 million extra dollars to use for your basketball program, you know, you can have a fancier chair in your locker room, or you can have a TV in front of every workout setting for the weightlifting. You know, does that help you win? Because people who get a lot more money in this industry, guess what they do with it? Waste it fast. Does that make sense?
Of course. How much more are you going to get in NIL? I guess that's going to become part of the job, too. What's my salary? What's my budget?
The NIL is not supposed to come from television revenue yet.
But that might be a factor for coaches now. It's like, hey, what kind of budget am I going to have to go get players?
That is a legitimate question.
You know?
And that's an alumni question.
Yeah.
And K-Staters respond very well to Jerome Tang. And they have. They've upped the NIL money available for this year's basketball team, I think, tremendously.
It's all about money with Nate Buchanan. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.